Blog Talk Radio.
Three penguins got a tour of an art museum. Like many patrons, they confuse Monet with Manet. I'm Brett Singer. This is my show. I think I could tell the difference, but I don't know. I'm not that cultured. I'm not as cultured as the penguins. What can I tell you? Hello, hello, hello. Welcome to Brett from the Bunker. It is Thursday, May 28th. I actually forgot it was Thursday today. I have therapy on Thursdays, and I forgot to turn my phone on. So I only got half a therapy session. That's what happens. May 28th, 2020, and I'm joined today by Rachel Elizabeth. Rachel, welcome.
Hi, thank you so much for having me. This is exciting.
Of course. Thank you for coming on. Now, I ask everyone, how are you holding up?
I am holding up okay. What did I do today? I woke up, I went for a cry walk, around
the house. A cry
walk?
Wait, what is a cry walk?
I've recently, since fleeing New York City, I've been, just kind of like hanging out, with my friends and just kind of thinking back to old times, and writing. And so, to like get my creative juices flowing. Sometimes I'll go for a walk around the neighborhood. Sometimes I'll just, you know, walk down the stairs in tears and then go to my fridge and eat a pizza lunchable for breakfast and just kind of, you know, reflect on memories of yesteryear. And it's very extra, very melodramatic. My roommate is like, I'm sleeping. Please stop playing Joni Mitchell on full blast. I've been okay. You know, I would say I'm doing well. This is good for me. So yeah.
Great. A pizza lunchable for breakfast. That is kind of sad, I'm not gonna lie.
It is sad, but I honestly, I feel like, as a plus size woman, like anytime I eat anything, it's just like revolutionary. You know what I mean? Like anytime I wear a bikini, anytime I wear something that like, or eat something that isn't healthy, like I'm basically making art. It's a really great way to start my day.
Okay. That's good. It's an artistic way to start your day.
That is important. Exactly.
That is absolutely very, very important. What have you been doing to stay sane?
I've been really into making jewelry recently out of polymer clay, kind of a way to like combine the childhood pastime with kind of like the pressure to be making money right now, even though the world is imploding. So it's like a cute little way for me to just kind of like disassociate and, I guess, be creative in kind of a very basic way. I thought about starting an Etsy store, but I don't know how to do math, and there's, like, a lot of numbers when you try to go and figure that stuff out. And so I've just been, like, laying all the earrings that I make all over my kitchen table for everybody that comes in the house to kind of see and appreciate. Sometimes they're like, we've seen these 15 times, looks like Play-Doh. But I don't know. That's just what I've been enjoying doing.
Now, when you say everybody coming into your house, are you not social distancing, or are people coming over to your house?
I don't really believe in social distancing. I don't really believe in science. No, just kidding.
You had me. We don't know each other, so I don't know.
All right, yeah. I'm a bit of a contrarian. Fuck the CDC. No. I have a couple friends. I live with my roommate. She's my best friend. She's the one that kind of rescued me from New York, and I'm living with her right now, and we have just like what they call pods. So I'm living in the South right now, and that's where she's living. And so we have like what they call pods, which is basically a group of five people, and you don't really like invite other people into your pod. And so I've just been hanging out with the same five people for like the past 2 weeks, and I already hate all of them. So I might risk getting infected just to like get some new faces around. No, I'm just kidding. I guess it's a bit of an exaggeration to say a ton of people, because it's only, you know, like four or five, but it's still, I feel lucky to be able to have some social interaction. Definitely.
Sure. Absolutely. I mean, I think that's key. That's nice. I mean, it's really no different if you had a family of five. You know, as long as you limit it to those people, then it's fine. I think, and pod, I like that. That's evocative. So that's really good. So you say when did you get out of New York? You said you were rescued from New York?
So on a serious note, I'm very grateful, very lucky to have such a great friend and be able to, you know, have the freedom to kind of relocate somewhere that's a little bit more like conducive to regular everyday life right now. And it was about 2 weeks ago. I was living in my apartment for like since the pandemic started, and I'm a hypochondriac, so I was actually, not to like brag or anything or like act like, you know, I started the social distancing trend first, but like the second I heard about COVID, like I quarantined like a week before anyone else did.
Right.
And so I had been, that sounded so braggadocious. Like, I don't know why I even said that, but.
No, you gotta, you gotta be proud of what makes you you know?
Exactly. And, you know, I don't have much else to be proud of, so I think that's the thing that I'm really going to stick to for the next, like, you know, 5 or 6 months. But I think that, like, yeah, I think it was probably quarantining on my own, completely alone, by myself for, like, 2 or 3 months. And at first it was, like, this artistic thing, like, I'm just going to write my memoir. And I my contract ended for my job, too, so I was unemployed. And so I was, like, I'm just going to write my memoir and, like, walk around in a nightgown and, you know, not talk to anyone or whatever. And then, like, after 2 months of that, I was like, I can't take this anymore. And so my friend was like, look, I'll drive up and come get you and you can just come live with me. So.
Wow, that is a good friend.
Yes, she is an amazing friend. We've been friends for 6 years. She's very brilliant, very functional. We're very different people. But, yeah, she's great.
Yeah, that's terrific. Yeah, the whole, like, I'm going to write my memoir, I'm going to write the Great American Novel, I'm going to write a screenplay, I mean – you know, I suppose if I'd started a screenplay when this started, I'd probably be finished with it by now. But I don't know. I feel like I'm doing a lot of things. Like, I'm doing a lot of comedy, and that's really what's kind of keeping me sane.
That's awesome.
So,
yeah,
you know, I mean, part of me is, though, thinking that maybe I should be shifting my focus and maybe I should put it all towards something a little more concrete. I don't know. I'm torn. So you're making the jewelry. What else do you do to keep the time, just to pass the time?
I do write a lot. Like, I have been writing, kind of the stuff I've always been wanting to write on my blog, and that's been exciting. It's gotten good feedback, so I'm good about, I feel good about that. But I would say other than that, I finally decided that I'm going to really lean into this moment and learn how to use a stove. I've been cooking quite a lot. So I don't know. I've been cooking things like panini kind of situation. Sometimes I'll even get like really daring and make pasta and like boil water. Except when I have to drop the noodles in, I kind of do this thing where like I throw them in and then I like step back really quickly because I'm scared that the water is going to hit me in the face and I'll like, you know, I don't know, something horrible will happen to my skin. I'm very afraid of hot water, and so I just kind of, like, drop it in, and then I, like, run back 2 feet, and then drop another one in, and it's, like, very inefficient, and it doesn't even really taste that good, but I feel like I've accomplished something, so
fair enough. As long as you,
the deal for me.
As long
yeah.
as you feel like you've accomplished something. So COVID must have hit you pretty hard, I mean, with being a hypochondriac.
You know, it's really, it's funny because, and I always, like, tell my friends this, like, I feel like hypochondria is just based in, like, it's not an evidence-based fear, right? And so I always say, like, being a hypochondriac is basically like smoking a pack of cigarettes because you're worried about getting cancer, you know? And so it's like with hypochondria, I'm always scared of things that definitely won't happen. So, like, if there's ever a real threat of anything, it, like, doesn't faze me as much. It's all
okay.
like, things that, like, aren't real. You know what I mean? Like, I
oh,
myself,
I see. So
like,
it's the things that really
cancer.
Can't hurt you. But the things that really can hurt you, you're like, eh.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Oh, my God. Yeah, exactly. Like, truly, in a lot of ways. I mean, I quarantined, like, way before, but, like, once it was, like, real. You know what I mean? Like, when I was like, oh, like, it's not going to hurt young people. Like, it's this thing. I was like, oh, shit, I'm going to quarantine. And then, like, once the evidence came out of, like, this is a very real threat. 1 in 5 people in New York City have it. I'm just like, you know, I'm not going to get it. Like, it's going to be fine. But I did got diagnosed myself with, like, 4 other illnesses while I was in quarantine. And it freaked me out that I couldn't go to a doctor to get a CAT scan. So I guess in some ways it did affect me.
This is not a good time for, you know, for doctor visits for things that are not COVID-related. Like, even COVID-related, they don't want to talk to you.
Yeah, I feel like they never want to talk to me. you know, it's really weird. I don't know if you found this, but I feel like there's something like fun about going to the doctor because like the nurses have to be nice to you, like kind of similar like going to a restaurant or going to a bar, right? Like the waitresses and the bartenders, like they have to be friendly to you basically, no matter what you say. That's how it is with the doctor's office. Like I can be so obnoxious and the nurse will just like smile and be like, yeah, that's great. And it's just like this, you know, it feels amazing. It feels like the love I never got as a child. And so I feel like mostly that's what I miss the most about, you know, being able to go to the doctor.
Fair enough. I don't know if I feel like the nurses always have to be nice to you. Maybe that's just, not that the nurses are mean to me, but they're not always nice to me.
Okay.
It depends. Some of the doctor's offices I've been to, they're a little cranky. So I wouldn't say that it's exclusive.
I experience that.
You want a bad nurse? You want a mean nurse?
Yeah, I want a bad nurse.
Nurse ratchet.
I just want a nurse who's like, shut up, you're not dying, I don't want to hear it, and she has like some, you know, kind of like snarkily glaring at me for the rest of the visit. Like I would
nice.
Love that.
Nice. There you go.
That's
that sounds
exactly
fun.
Exactly what I need. Yeah.
What kind of stuff do you put on your blog?
So basically, I am writing kind of like, I don't know if this is the proper term for it, but like a serialized kind of memoir thing. So I'll put it out part by part. And right now it's just, I went to graduate school in the South. I'm not from the South, I'm from Pittsburgh, but I went to graduate school there. And it was a very different environment in a lot of ways. And I think mental illness kind of exacerbated a lot of the problems I experienced. And my dad died when I was in grad school and just kind of, it was like this hurricane of just like, chaos that really like brought out the worst in me. And so I have all these like absurd memories of me just being, you know, self-destructive, but at the same time kind of like getting involved with some really shitty people. And so I do like to write in a comedic way about, you know, things that are, you know, in some sense like objectionable or traumatic or something. And so I'm just writing about three kind of like noteworthy dates that I went on, if you can call them that, and kind of how the dynamics between me and like those guys and just the environment in which they happened kind of affected me. And it's not very happy, but you know, I try to make it funny, and it's a story that I want to tell. And so I've just been like releasing those in separate parts. And right now I'm about to publish part five on my blog after I edit it a little bit more.
So you treat it almost like you know, almost like chapters of a book.
Yeah. I think that's a good way to put it. Yes.
Sorry, I was just distracted by a text from my son that he can't do the dentist appointment I just set up for him. So this is what every time people talk about having ADD, I'm always like, you know, if you're not distracted by the slightest little, you know, shiny object every single time you're doing something else, maybe you don't have ADD. I don't know. I believe me, I got it pretty bad. There's nothing to be done. I mean, it's just like, I just have to turn the phone the other way. And when I forget to do that, I get that. And it totally derails me. It's horrible. It's just horrible.
And look, is it ever to the point during our podcast where you're like, I can't take the sound of her voice anymore, I need to tune her out and disassociate? Like, just let me know. I will totally understand. Because that's
the
majority of people I talk to.
Stop that. Do people say that to you? Is that a thing you hear? Do people say that? That's a terrible thing to say.
I think I've not been very judicious in terms of like the men that I've dated. So yes, men have said similar things.
Men who you've dated said to you, I can't stand the sound of your voice.
They have said things like, you talk too much, you have too many opinions, like, you know, calm down. Yeah, yeah.
You talk too much, you have too many opinions. You're like actively dating someone, or is that a first date? When does that come up? At what point in the relationship does that come up?
So the men that I've dated, my experience has been that there's kind of like, I don't even want to call it a honeymoon phase because the sex is not that good. The sex actually gets better once they start being terrible. But that's the whole thing that, like, I'll unpack with my therapist. Like, we don't need to address that here. But I would say that, in all honesty, like, yeah, it comes later in the relationship. Like, for me, that's been the pattern.
That's staggering to me. I mean, I can't even imagine. I mean, it's just like, if you don't like, I mean, that's, you have too many opinions. What an obnoxious thing to say. What a terrible thing to say to somebody.
I mean, it's I've kind of like I've come to expect it. I don't know. It's interesting because I find that maybe you find this with comedy, like there are some things like you don't realize are fucked up until someone points it out to you because you're almost like so used to like using humor to cope with it. You know what I mean?
Like what?
Oh, just like just stuff like that, like men being shitty or like, you know, things related to mental illness. Like I joke about that stuff all the time and then it doesn't occur to me until I like tell someone that's maybe like not super familiar with my comedy, like, oh, I've had this experience, they're just like, oh my god, that's terrible, and I'm just like, oh yeah, it is terrible. I'm just
like, in what way are men shitty? And I'm not saying that to say that they're not. I'm just sort of wondering, you know, what specifically you mean when you say that.
Oh, I don't know. I think that like I guess maybe I'm more like, it's more obvious to me just because I feel like so much of the comedy that I like and the stuff that I read deals with, you know, issues of, you know, men just kind of, you know, kind of like what I said, like not listening to women or maybe being threatened by women that have, you know, opinions or I think for me, like, you know, a lot of the stuff I write about is like men, you know, kind of like being ashamed that they're attracted to me because I'm heavier. And so in my experience, that's kind of been the way in which like I've experienced like misogyny is men. I guess, I don't know, being like, yeah, I'll sleep with you, but it has to be like a secret or whatever, you know.
Oh, that's awful. I'm sorry. That's terrible. I mean, what is that? I'll sleep with you, but it has to be a secret.
I think men are terrible. I dated this. It is. And it's funny because I find that all the men that I've experienced this with are also mediocre. Like I dated this one guy who was like, he was always talking about how like he was such like a great, like, oh, I built this, I built that, I built everything in my home, and I go in this house and it's all like IKEA furniture and like pictures that he takes to the wall with duct tape. I'm just like, what? Like, you really, like, you're embarrassed of me? Like, this is shameful. This looks like a dystopian, like, Pottery Barn teen. Like, what? Where am I? You know what I mean? Like, yeah.
How do you date someone like that, though? I mean, say, like, I mean, I feel terrible that you've had that experience.
I think that when I was in graduate school, and this is like literally what I'm writing about right now, is that I think that after a while I came to have, you know, I mean, have you ever been to graduate school?
I have not. I always wish I had because then I would have a master's degree. And I don't really want to go to graduate school, but I kind of want a master's degree. I think that'd be fun, which is not a good reason. So that's why I don't go.
I mean, it's funny because like it broke me so much, like quote unquote master's degree. Like, I don't feel like I've mastered anything. Like, you know what I mean? I feel like I'm,
yeah.
Like it just psychologically broke me to the point of just feeling so inadequate because especially with philosophy, that's what I studied. Like so much of it is just like being criticized and scrutinized and having, you know, yourself, you know, having people tell you your views are wrong. And so I think in a lot of ways it was like, I wasn't in the most like progressive environment in graduate school. Like in a lot of ways, New York was fun to go to, but I think through comedy, I definitely found amazing people and kind of learned more about like, just overall why the South, why there's some stereotypes about the South in terms of regressive policies. But my department wasn't the most progressive or like feminist minded place. And so I think that, it is very sad. I think I just came to have like a very low opinion of myself, but that's also what like made me start doing comedy, right? Was being in that kind of dark place. And so I don't know. I guess for me, it's hard to like think about it now in a way that isn't, where I'm not kind of just ultimately like laughing at it, as sad as that is. I don't know.
Well, so that's an interesting transition. So how did you get into comedy?
Yeah, so I'd always like wanted to do stand up. Like this is obviously coming from someone who studied feminist philosophy. Some people might interpret this as like an embarrassing thing for me to say, but like I was obsessed with Louis C.K. like, you know, before all this stuff about his actions came out. Like I was obsessed with his
comedy. Let me just point out, like all that stuff is horrible, but he was a good comic. Like, you know, we can't pretend that those routines weren't good. Like they were, and it was interesting stuff.
I think there's something to be said for that. I think like when we say someone's funny, that does not entail any kind of character evaluation or endorsement
exactly.
of like their character, right? And so, yeah, I think I can, I haven't seen his new special, to be honest, but I think, like, you know, I would still say the comedy of his that inspired me to do comedy is still very funny and, you know, But yeah, I mean, am I going to buy tickets to a show or support him?
Right, that's
not
the thing.
Yeah.
Like, I right. kind of want to see his new special. I also kind of don't want to give him money. Like, I sort of want someone else to do it. Like, which is, I know, is a little silly, but
to be fair,
I mean, if it were on Netflix, I probably would have watched it already. Like, it would already be there. But you know, I'm already paying for it. You know, whatever. But but once I have to go and sort of plunk down $8. It's like, well, I don't know. I don't like what he did. I don't know that I want to support him.
Oh, of course. I mean, he's a shitty. Yeah, I mean, he did terrible things. And I mean, a couple of my like hardcore feminist friends, they like got it like illegally or whatever, and they all watched it. I didn't have time to do it, but I heard their take on it. They said it was bad. So I mean, I don't have to see it. But yeah, I mean, I think it's ridiculous to think that you know. You can't go back and listen to his old stuff, or you can't, you know, say that his old stuff is funny, because saying someone's funny, in my opinion, is not the same as saying, oh, you know, this is someone I admire or something, you know?
Right.
But at
one
point I did. Yeah.
Right. So at one point you admired him. So he inspired you. So what about his stuff inspired you to get to start stand up?
Well, I think I think, but Brian Regan also was the first comic I listened to.
Great
comic.
Like,
very different, but like there is something like I think, and then there was just something about like Louis C.K. specifically, just like going on stage and being this like just. I mean, I'm sure a lot of it is strategic and calculated, but he always seemed to just kind of go on there and just be so like unapologetically, like disgusting, like this old perverted man just like walking on stage and telling these like, you know, kind of graphic and also just, you know, like I don't know, there was something about just kind of, and maybe this is like my masochistic tendencies are showing, but there was like something about him just like walking on stage and almost like degrading himself in a way and exposing these like terrible thoughts that he has, where it inspired me to be like, you know, what if I went on stage and I talked about some of, you know, the like traumatic experiences I've had, or some of the experiences that I've had, you know, with men, where I'll have like, you know, feminist women telling me you shouldn't put up with that, and yet I still put up with it. You know what I mean? And it's just kind of like, I guess to subject yourself to an audience and make all the things about you that are like not polished and not, you know, respectable or something, like make those things funny and like use kind of like degrading yourself in that way to make a point or tell what, you know, truth or, you know, make people laugh or something, I think was inspiring to me, if that makes any sense. And I felt at the time, you know, I had a lot to get out, a lot that I wanted to say. And so for a year I would like write stand-up routines, but I would never perform them. And then finally, when my father died, my second year of graduate school, I was just, there were so many things that just made me be like, I need an outlet or I'm going to, you know, like kill myself. Like, you know, I was very, very depressed. And so I went and I just kind of like tried it out. And it was, I'm a very socially, pre-comedy, I was a very socially anxious person. I still am in a lot of ways. But just after that first set, I just felt like I love this. And it went well. And, yeah, so after that, I just kept doing it, and I was.
That's great.
Yeah, so
Where did you do it the first time?
So I was going to graduate school at Florida State University, and I was in. I was living in Tallahassee, Florida, so like North Florida. A lot of great people that I met through comedy, but before I did comedy, it was not. It's not a progressive university. It is not a progressive town. If you know, it's very segregated. And so if you're at FSU, you know, a lot of it is like white conservative Trump supporters that are either students or alumni. And it's very misogynistic, very racist, very anti-Semitic. And so it was interesting how through comedy, those were all the outcasts. You know what I mean? Like it was a bunch of like people that were, you know, native people to Tallahassee, you know, queer students, students of color, like people that really needed to find a place, I think. A lot of people gravitated towards comedy. And so I was lucky enough to, it was such a small town that no one had to fight for stage time or anything like that. And so I kind of fell in love with the comedians there pretty quickly. And yeah, I started, like after I did it once, I started doing it like 2-3 times a week.
Wow, that's great. Yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah.
That's what you got to do. Great. You got to just dive right in. Like I did it once, like 5 years ago, and then I didn't do it again. Not because it didn't go well, because it actually, I mean, I look back on the set and it was horrible, but it didn't go that badly. They left me up there for like 9 minutes, and I had about maybe 5 minutes of material. So that was an interesting experience. But what I didn't have was I didn't have any community. And so I went to go and look at open mics, and I looked at Bad Slava, and I was just like, ugh, this is like a crazy long list. And I don't know, I didn't have anyone to do it with. And so I didn't really do anything until like 3 years later, maybe 4 years later. And then I took a class. I had a little bit of structure, and then I had some people to kind of get around with. And even though it wasn't like I had a buddy going to every open mic, but I just kind of needed a little bit of a community. I sort of needed people that I could discuss it with,
right,
and talk about jokes with. And that was really important. And then once I did that, I went in whole hog, and that's really all I do now. Like most of my life. Well, I'm a stay-at-home dad, and like you're talking about being intimidated by women with opinions. I am the opposite. Like that's never been a problem for me. I was raised by a single mother. Maybe that's part of it. But, like, you know, my wife has almost all of our relationship made more money than me, and that's never, you know, been an issue. That's not something I care about.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely think, like, you're right about something. I think, like, the men I've dated that have had questionable kind of, well, more than questionable, like, misogynistic, I guess, thoughts about women and how they should be and everything. I mean, a lot of them have like a lot of issues with their moms, and you know, I swear, like sometimes like when I have sex with men, I feel like Sigmund Freud is like rolling in his grave somewhere, because I have so many like issues with my father, and I tend to attract men that have issues with their mom, and the whole thing just crystallizes into this like insane thing. Like, oh God. But, I mean, I get most of my comedy material from those kinds of encounters. So in a way, I don't know. There's like a fucked up part of me that's like not happy that I've encountered those people, but at least feel like, oh, well, you know, you can take something out of any experience and make it funny. I mean, I don't know if that's relatable, but.
Yeah, no, I think it is. Yeah. I think it is. Who else do you like? What comedians are you into?
I love Tiffany Haddish. I was just watching her the other day, and I was watching her set on like it's called like Def Jam Comedy, and it's just amazing how, I mean, she uses her body to do comedy. She's so like, again, like kind of, you know, she's not afraid to talk about sex, and she's not afraid to talk about things that might be provocative, but you know, do it in a way where she's, you know, I don't know, she's entertaining people, she's making a point, like, I think she's super feminist, she really inspires me, and, let's see, I really like, who else, now I'm, like, blanking all of a sudden, I'm trying to think of what I watch. I like Gary Goldman a lot. I had never seen him perform, but I did a bringer with him at West Side Comedy Club when I was still in New York City, and it was the first time I had ever seen him perform. I embarrassingly don't know many, like, you know, hot comedians, you know what I mean? Like up and coming people. Well, not that he's up and coming, but
not embarrassing.
I'm not a
I mean, you know,
person
you know
with
you
the
know.
Times.
Yeah, you gotta know who you know.
But Gary Goldman is, yeah. And Gary Goldman.
Oh no, Gary's crushing
writer.
It. I mean, Gary, his Twitter tips are amazing. I found a website that they cataloged all of his tips. And it was just, it's fantastic. I mean, I would like him to put it into a book. I digest information better in book form than I do on Twitter. Probably an age thing. What someone did is they put it all in a nice, easily formatted list, and you know, it's done by category, and he's got some annotations on it, and it was like, oh, this is perfect. I'm very, very happy. So it's really cool.
Yeah, he was, and I just, like, something, like, there's something about him, like, he's such a writer, you know what I mean? I think that I admire that so much, like, when you can tell that, you know, they've strategically chosen every word and, like, placed it in a way where it's going to, like, maximize laughter, like, maybe I'm overanalyzing it, which I tend to do, but, like, I don't know, there's something about just when you can tell that someone's, like, written it almost as a piece of writing and they're performing it, I mean, that just, that inspires me a lot, like, there's a lot of writers I look up to. And,
absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. No, I totally agree. All right. So I want to try something, if you're willing to take the journey with me. Can we sort of check out the news and maybe riff a little bit?
Sure. Yeah. I'm not the best improv person, but I will never go to take class at UCB. but I will do my best.
Well, it's not so much improv. It's just kind of like, for example, Martin Scorsese has just been is going to do his next movie with Leonardo DiCaprio for Apple TV for $150 million, which is a huge price tag and is a really big deal. What do you think about that?
Well, I have to admit I don't exactly know what Apple TV is.
It's a Netflix. It's basically their competition for Netflix.
Okay, interesting. Yeah, I feel like I'm the worst person. So I'm just like not into with pop culture or anything like that. But
oh, really?
I think
okay.
That is yes. I think that's it. Yeah, that's not. But I mean, yes, that sounds like a lot of money, and I don't know.
I just sort of part of me wonders. Like, I understand they're trying to get subscribers, but I also wonder like if maybe they could give some to, you know, some smaller projects just to fill in what they have and maybe find, you know, like you could get a lot for $150 million. Like, obviously you're going to get Martin Scorsese, you're going to get some subscribers, 100%, you're going to get a ton of attention, and that's really good. But I also wonder if maybe, you know, like maybe you get a comedian that nobody, you know, get some comics that people haven't heard of. Do a young comedian's show. Like Rodney Dangerfield used to do.
That would be awesome.
Wouldn't that be cool? Like that would be kind of a fun thing. It wouldn't make the same kind of splash, but maybe you discover somebody and then they were discovered on your platform. So that might be a fun thing.
You can take all the credit for them for years to come. You know, Apple founded you, Apple made you. You know, you have to thank Apple in every one of your specials. Exactly. Yeah, right. I think that.
Like
yeah,
HBO.
That
I mean, when HBO that did that, HBO. You know, I believe that's where Rodney Dangerfield's Young Comedian specials were, and that was, you know, those were huge. I mean, that was where comedians broke out.
I know what you're talking about. Yeah, I used to. Oh my God, I used to watch those with my dad. Like the really like they're like from maybe I'm getting the year wrong because I have no concept of time, but they're kind of from maybe from the 80s. Like Marc Maron did one, David Cross did one. Am I thinking of the right thing? Yes.
I think so. Yeah. And it was like when they're young and they're starting out. Now, obviously, they're not. You know, it's young comedians, and obviously they're still young. But I mean, it's not like they're in their first year. But at the same time, you know, this was like their first major exposure. You know, that's how they get onto the national scene. So, and I, you know, it's much easier now. You can get online, whatever. Like, you're really killing it on Twitter. You do very well on Twitter.
I didn't think that. It's weird because before the coronavirus, I mean, and like again, like admittedly, like I wasn't super into, you know, leveraging social media to do well with comedy. You know what I mean? That's just like that's never been my thing. I'm not very tech savvy. But when Corona happened, I was just like, I don't, you know, I have no other way to tell my jokes because I don't really like the Zoom stuff. So, yeah, I just kind of started telling my jokes on Twitter, and it's been going well.
I was just going to say, like, do you spend time on Twitter, like, sort of getting new followers and doing the various things that social media experts tell you to do, or are you just putting your jokes out there?
Oh, I mean, I think it's a little bit of both. I think, like, I try to write jokes. Sometimes I'll have a spontaneous thought and put it out, but I try to write jokes, and then I say, okay, well, and a lot of my friends have taught me how to do it, you know, so I've been really lucky because I didn't really know much about it, and I asked my friends that were doing well, you know, hey, can you help me out? And so I'm very grateful to them. And they kind of gave me some tips on, okay, you should post it this time. You should space them out like this. You should try to connect with these, you know, other comics, you know, follow other comics, follow other writers. And so, I try to write quality jokes and make people laugh, but I definitely do it. I definitely try my best to do it strategically where I know I'll get good engagement and stuff. It's been really fun to do, honestly, to experiment with that sort of thing. I guess that's my method. And then I had one tweet that went crazy and got like 300,000 likes or something, and that was fun.
What? Yeah. Now, do you have any sense of why that blew up?
I mean, so the tweet was, did you have a happy childhood or are you funny?
That was really good. That's a good tweet. That's a funny joke. That's what, you know, what's great about that is people sent that to me. And I was like,
oh,
yeah,
really?
Yeah, she's a friend of a friend. Like, you know, I know who that is.
<that's>
You know,
funny.
And it was really good.
I,
that was good. That was well done.
You know, it was it was honestly, I was happy about that because I feel like there was a lot of frustration that I was experiencing that was kind of like behind why I tweeted that. And so to see so many people relating to that sentiment was like very exciting and kind of validating, you know. I mean, other than the fact that like my follower count literally determines my self-worth, it was just, but it was like in seriousness, like it was like, it was very validating, I guess, to see how many people related to something like that, you know.
Sure. But I mean, also non-comedians, like the people that forwarded that to me were not exclusively comedians. That was,
right.
You know, so that definitely went beyond the comedian community. People were way into it.
Yeah, it was cool. It was a cool thing that happened. And now I feel like I can only, you know, regress from here. You know what I mean? It's like, that's my peak. That was my peak. I peaked in comedy and now it's downhill. Now it's quarter life crisis. I sell out. You know what I mean? Like, it's,
right.
So
I think it's interesting that you say that there was a lot of frustration behind it. So, I mean, I think that there was, you know, it wasn't just, you know, a cute turn of phrase. Like it was something, there was emotion behind it. There was actual like legitimate feeling behind there.
Oh yeah, definitely.
So what is that? What was the thought process behind that?
I think that, and again, like before I decided to like leave academia, the thing that I was dabbling with was a project on humor and the kind of norms that govern humor and where a good sense of humor comes from. And
oh, cool.
Are the psychologists thinking about humor in the right way? And, you know, something that you'll find in research is that, and I think a lot of people know, if they don't know this, I feel like people will, it's believable, right? That, you know, humor, being able to cultivate sense of humor is often a coping strategy with, you know, trauma. And one of the reasons I love Tiffany Haddish is because like she grew up in an abusive home, and she'll say in interviews, like, I used humor to, you know, make my mom laugh when, you know, so she didn't hit me. And, you know, I have, you know, experienced similar types of abuse as a child. And I think that, like, now when people tell me people will say, oh, you're funny, or like, you're so cool that you're a comedian. Like, I mean, it is cool, but I think also, especially just the other really funny comedians that I know that I'm friends with, like, we all do this because that's kind of what we had to do at an early age to cope and survive psychologically or even physically. And so I think that oftentimes maybe people that don't have that kind of upbringing or don't relate to that forget that, yeah, being funny is nice, you know, and comedy is great, but a lot of the ability to be funny and entertain people and just kind of maybe have a knack for that sort of thing is kind of a product of, like, you know, very serious and sad.
Right. There's a lot of real pain behind behind the jokes.
Right. Yeah, exactly. And also I have a friend that has not experienced any of that. And she's not a very funny person. She's not a comedian. It's a non-comedian, but she's not a funny person. And she'll always, you know, say, like, why am I not, you know, why are you so funny and I'm not funny and everything. And, you know, I do think about that a lot. And then I see, you know, the life that she's had. I'm just like, well, hey, like, you might not have had to work the humor muscle, so to speak, as much as other people.
There's a lot behind that one sentence. There's a lot going on there.
The tweet?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think so. And I think that's why maybe, I mean, and then of course, you know, you have the people that, you know, it was so funny, like this one woman commented and she was just like, these two aren't mutually exclusive. Like, I had a great childhood and I'm also hilarious. And, you know,
like,
Right. And it's like,
did you respond?
Yes.
That's exactly how I would have responded. I would have been like, no, you're not.
I didn't respond because I knew Twitter would respond for me.
What did Twitter say?
Oh, they were roasting her. I felt bad. I felt a little bad. Like,
well, you're opening
like,
yourself up. I mean, my God. I mean, you know, I can only imagine. I mean, what a stupid thing to say. I mean, you might as well just paint a sign on you and just say, you know, Twitter, go after me. Because, I mean, come on.
Right.
The people who are clicking like on the tweet are not the people who disagree with it. That's 300,000 people who think this is, you know, speaking truth. So I don't know what you're expecting. And it, you know, I'm sorry. I don't want anyone to get abused, but at some point you kind of reap what you sow. I mean, you're basically begging for it at that point.
Right. And the thing I find too, and I didn't experience it until this happened, but it's like some people don't like it was a joke. You know what I mean? Like, do I really think that you have to be abused in order to be hilarious?
No, of course not.
But do I think in many cases? Yes. You know what I mean? I think that trope is absolutely rooted in reality, and there's empirical evidence that suggests that even. And so, you know, it was funny seeing people just be like, I thought I was funny, but then I read this tweet and my mom was really nice to me, so holy shit, guys, maybe I'm not funny. And I'm just like, calm down. Like, it's not that
relax,
serious,
it's okay.
Right.
You can still be funny. And obviously, as near as I can tell, I'm reading Carol Leifer's book right now, which I highly recommend. It definitely skews younger than you know she is, right? Or no?
I don't. I'm sorry, but I'll
No, that's okay. I'm only saying it I should probably clarify if you don't. She came up with Jerry Seinfeld and Jay Leno and Paul Reiser. Like, she was sort of part of that class.
Okay.
She was on Letterman like 30 times. She was a writer for Seinfeld. She wrote for this TV show called Rules of Engagement that my wife and I used to like. She's very, very funny. She's just an old school comedian, but been around a long time. Her writing is very breezy and effortless, and it's actually like solid advice for young people. Like, it definitely doesn't skew towards me, but I'm enjoying the book anyway. But she, by as near as I can tell, had a very happy childhood. Like her father was super supportive. She decided she was dropping out of college to do comedy, and her parents were like, "Go for it," you know. But she's really funny. Like, so it doesn't mean, you know, like, it obviously you're going to find people for whom that's not true. It's a tweet, you know. Like, at some point, like you just said, I mean, like, it's a joke. Like, but it's a joke that there's truth in it. Yeah, that's, you know, there that a lot of the, if you've tweeted, a lot of the people who are funny had bad childhoods. That's not funny.
Exactly.
That's not a good joke. That's going to get two likes.
Right.
That's going to get two likes. They're going to be from your friends. You know, it's not the same thing.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's going to get two likes. They're going to be from your friends. That's funny.
Right. I mean, you know, nobody cares.
Yeah.
Whereas what you wrote blew up. That's different. Now, you said it's sort of you measure your self-worth against your followers. Do you mean that?
I mean, I think that everyone, I mean, I think now, right, especially like, I feel like with young comedians, like, you know, your social media capital is absolutely like, you know, a big, factor in, your success in like the industry and the opportunities that you can get. And so I think that everyone feel, at least many of the people that I know, feel, like very much kind of like, you know, measure their success or their worth as a comedian or whatever against, you know, how many followers they have, how well they're doing on social media. And I think that while it's kind of, I mean, ultimately I feel like followers, right, is a very trite sort of thing. I mean, it is definitely a reality, that's kind of now what a lot of people look at.
Sure.
I don't really, I mean, my sense of self-worth is so compromised as it is that I have no idea what I'm measuring that by now at this point. But no, I mean, I don't mean it like 100% serious, but I definitely feel more optimistic about my ability to do well in comedy now that I've been doing well on Twitter, you know, if that answers your question.
No. I realized I phrased that in a more serious way than I meant, but I know exactly what you mean. I mean, that feeling is very real. Even like, I sort of have, I enjoy tweeting. I would like to get more attention from my tweets. I also understand that there's things I have to do in order to get that, and I don't know that I'm willing to spend that much time on it. I have a mixed relationship with it. I hate to do this, but we have to stop. I wish we didn't have to, but we're gonna get cut off. Can you tell everyone where they can find you on the social medias?
Oh, sure. I'll plug both. So my Twitter is feminist_thought, spelled THOT, kind of a play on. I mean, I studied like feminist theory, feminist thought in grad school, so it was kind of a play on that because.
Cool.
Talk about feminism, also talk about sex, talk about how both of them kind of make me troubled inside because I can never reconcile my sexual values and my political values. I don't know why I'm giving like an academic talk about this right now. I'm just
real quick, I hate to rush you, but real quick because we're going to get cut off.
Oh, okay. Sorry. Okay.
That's okay.
So it's feminist, and then same on Instagram, feminist_thought, THCOT. Thank you so much for having me. This was
Rachel.
So,
this was
so
delightful.
Exciting.
Thank you so much for coming on. This was great. Everybody, we will be back tomorrow at 11 a.m. And as always, please stay safe.